in the morning, they will come for you at night, standing together as people of conscience and demanding Mahmoud Khalil's freedom. It is a stand against fascism, and it is a stand for our collective right to free speech and protest. I'm Dave Zirin. This has been a WPFW editorial.
Welcome to The Collision.
The Collision, where sports and politics smash, Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
And welcome to Committee March and Comment for Tuesday, April 22nd. I'm Dave Rabin, joined by my co-host, Jenna Parker. Later in the show, I'll be joined by Andy Z on the editorial board of RefuseFascism.org and host of the Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube. And that will be followed by an interview marking the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. And on with the show, take it away, Parker.
Hi, good morning to our community watch and comment listeners. Call us right now at 202-588-0893, as today we are continuing our discussion on a very important topic to many of our listeners in Prince George's County, the recent special primary elections in the county for the county executive seat, vacated when the previous county executive, Angela Alsobrooks, moved to the U.S. Senate seat. Out of a very crowded field emerged our current state's attorney, Aisha Braveboy, as a Democratic nominee and Jonathan White as the Republican nominee. Last week, we were joined by state's attorney Aisha Braveboy, and this week we have Jonathan White. Mr. White, welcome to Community Watch and Comment. And for our callers, welcome. We'd love to hear from you. Call us at 202-588-0893. Let's jump right in. Mr. White, please tell us about your life and background. I can hear you, yes. Okay.
WPFW presents Still We Rise, our 48th anniversary celebration on Friday, April 25th, 7 to 11 p.m. at Martin's Crosswinds in Greenbelt. Entertainment includes Navasha Daya and more. That's Still We Rise, WPFW's 48th anniversary celebration. Details at WPFWFM.org.
All right. We again are joined back with the Republican nominee for Prince George's County Executive, Jonathan White. Mr. White, it's so good to hear from you today. So can you give us a little bit of information around your background and life experience?
Yes, I'm a 30-year public servant. I've served in the Air Force for 20 years and 10 years with the federal government. I have a background in cybersecurity and all facets of security. I'm running to make Prince George's County better and safer.
That's awesome. That is great. When did you move to Prince George's County? Can you talk about any of...
Okay, I originally came here April 3rd, 1993, via the Air Force. I was stationed at Andrews Air Force Base. I left and came back, retired from the Pentagon, and went straight to the government right after I retired. I live and work here, and I'm a volunteer football coach at local high schools.
Oh, that's super awesome. I think that your story can resonate with a lot of people because a lot of our community are former military. They have moved to this area based on their assignments, and then they transitioned from the military and went into government contracting and things of that nature. So I definitely think that's something that can resonate with the listeners. That being said, can you talk to us about your journey into entering politics?
Basically, it's simple. I'm just a concerned citizen that wants better for the community. That's it. For the past since 93, we've asked for safer schools, lower taxes, and a safe community. and I feel like we haven't received it. And sometimes if you want change, you have to get off the couch, quit complaining, and get up and do it yourself. And that's the reason why I'm running. I just want better.
Okay, so were you involved into politics before then? Have you ever ran for office before this?
Yes, this? I ran for the county council. But I was defeated by Mel Franklin and Kelvin Hawkins.
Oh, okay, you ran at large for the county council at large. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. And that was your first foray into the election, the politics and area of that.
Yes. Yes. Basically, the real reason why I'm running is public safety. As I said earlier, I'm a volunteer football coach, and two of my kids were robbed getting off the school bus for their shoes and coat. And this is one of the richest African American counties in the nation. And this shouldn't be happening here. So I said never again. So I'm gonna try to make it better for the community that I live in. That's it.
And they got robbed in Prince George's County.
Clinton, Maryland.
Okay. That's terrible.
Didn't make the news, no outrage, no nothing. So if, like I said, if somebody has to cure, and this can't continue to happen.
No, I definitely understand. I think a lot of the community is concerned around safety, public safety for our young adults, as well as just the community at large, and finding different avenues for that. So, along with that, you talked about you touched on, you know, your journey in the Air Force, I believe it was.
Yes, ma'am.
And you know, your contracting work. Can you tell us more about your work and your accomplishments? You know, inside your work and within the community.
Like I said, I co-chairs Special Education Committee for Prince George's County. I think it's called the CSAC in 2017. For my job, most of my job was on the high side, on the classified side. So there's no big perks and no, you know, you just do your job and come home.
Okay, I understand that. So thank you again for your service. Can you talk a little bit more about, I guess, your work on CSAC? The Special Education Commission.
Yeah, the reason why I joined is because a couple of my kids had IEPs for the football team, and I wanted to see what resources were there for the for them, and to gauge and have a better understanding of what's really out there. And during that time, I did it for a year, and I got promoted, and I had to drop out. But what I learned is we have these programs and they're not being taken advantage of. And we have to do more to get more outreach out there of these programs. If we put money towards those programs and they're not utilized, we're just wasting money.
Mm-hmm. And for our listeners who do not, who aren't aware, can you explain what an IEP is?
It's an individual education program for kids with special needs and learning disabilities.
Thank you so much. And so I really do appreciate you going and talking about that. And so we touched on just kind of your decision to run for county executive. You previously ran for at large, and now you decided to run for the county executive. Can you talk a little bit more in depth about why you wanted to run for county executive?
I feel that
that's a little bit different than the county council, because county council you're working in tandem and in partnership with several other people, several other members of the council. But a county executive, while you do work with the county council, you're kind of in your own space and in that capacity. So can you walk us through the decision to change and why you wanted to do county executive?
The reason why is, like I said, public safety. For the past couple of years, we've been asking for a safer community. And I'm in my background, like I said, I'm with, I've done a lot of security jobs and a lot of management jobs. And I think I could serve the community this way, just by managing the county. Like I said, public safety is my top priority, and I think a comprehensive community policing strategies will help this community. And like I said, I'm a big proponent of education, and we can't continue to send these kids out into the community and let them fend for themselves. So that's it.
No, thank you so much for sharing that. I do want to give our listeners a chance to call in. We want to give our community comment and watch, listeners the opportunity to call in with any questions that they have for the Prince George's County Republican nominee for county executive at 202-588-0893. Again, 202-588-0893. You touched on two big themes in deciding to run for the county executive. You touched on education and you touched on public safety. One of the things you talked about for public safety was having a comprehensive COPS plan. Can you elaborate on what that would look like for the county?
Okay, currently we're down 300 officers, and 200 officers are eligible to retire. We need to backfill those jobs in order to have more police on the streets. Next, we have a real-time crime center coming up, and we need to ensure that project stays on course. And second, and lastly, I want to ensure that our public safety officers have every tool they need to get this job done.
Okay. Well, two follow-up questions to that. What is your strategy or plan to backfill all the openings for the police officers in Prince George's County? And how does that differ from the current plan that's being utilized by our chief, Malik Aziz?
Okay. Basically, I'm going to do a line-by-line review of every expenditure of the budget. I hope to get at least 2% of the budget and reallocate that money towards the public safety budget. And that should give us enough money to backfill those positions.
Right. Okay. So reallocating 2% of the annual Prince George's County budget to the police department to backfill those positions. How? Are you offering signing bonuses? Are you offering Are you changing the strategy of advertising to the people that are coming out?
And then, we need to make we need to have an incentive program to bring policemen to Prince George's County. And that is done, like saying, with incentives and other things.
Mm-hmm. So, are you going to do a grow with from within program so that we can do things from our own?
We are short 300 officers and 200 eligible to retire. We need to do a massive recruiting program to bring Prince George's County, bring policemen to apply for the jobs here in Prince George's County. That is why.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for that clarification. And then how would you strengthen? We have one caller on the line. Caller, what is your name? Where are you from? And what is your question for the county executive nominee for the Republican Party of Prince George's County?
Good afternoon. My name is Vanessa. I live in Temple Hills, Maryland, and my question is for the candidate is what are some of his proposals to generate revenue for the county? Because it's, you know, one thing to say lower taxes and then another to say that we need to, and I agree that we need, you know, for public safety, hire more police officers, but just shifting money from one place to another is then going to leave a hole in that funding. And we're already, struggling to stay in the black. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a great question. We're going to follow the playbook from Loudoun County. We need to utilize data centers. We need to bring data centers to the community in order to generate revenue. And that's the quickest way to do that. Loudoun County brings about $800 million to their community each year, just by data centers. And if we do that here, just follow the playbook, we can bring that money to Prince George's County.
Okay, what do you say to people in Prince George's County who have concerns about data centers being environmentally inappropriate and the strain on the infrastructure for energy?
Yes, they make green data centers that use less energy now. That's how I would handle that. And plus, we would zone those, work with the county council to zone those data centers in communities where there's not a lot of residents living.
Like what areas?
Like I said, it could be, I don't have it in front of me right now, but Prince George's County has already allocated a certain parcel of land for data centers. I don't have it in front of me right now, but they've already allocated mm-hmm. certain parcels of land for data centers. Right now, there's going to be one built in the old Landover Mall area. I'm not a fan of that one because it's in a heavily populated area, but that was already approved.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. Appreciated that. There was a question around education and context to you speaking about not throwing our kids out there. Can you give clarity on what you mean by that?
We have to prepare them for our future. Right now, based on some of the information that I read, we're ranked 22 out of 25 out of each school districts, and we need to focus on giving these kids a quality education that would help them in the long run. Right now, I care that these kids, like I said, when I talk to some of the kids that have graduated, there's nothing for them. Like I said, some of them don't want to go to college. So we need to have programs where, hey, we can partner with local unions and give them a certification so that way that they can have a chance to compete and earn a living, because it's expensive to live in this area. And like I said, I want to give them a chance. Chance to succeed.
So Prince George's County public school system, they employ a huge chunk of Prince George's County residents, including teachers, educators, facilities managers, administration. How would you support them in supporting a world-class education?
Could you elaborate a little bit more on your question? Like I said, there's a delay.
How would you, in your county executive role, the role of the county executive, support the school system in providing a world-class education?
To the kids?
Yes.
To the kids? Like I said, there's programs out there now that are not available at every school. Like, for example, in some schools, there's a barber program, but it's not offered at every school. And there's a fireman program that's not offered at every school. We need to allocate additional funding so those programs can be offered at all schools, give all kids a chance to succeed.
Okay. And what monies would you take from what areas to do that?
We'd have to look at the budget and do a line-by-line justification of each expenditure and reallocate that money. For example, there was a report, there were $60 million going out in a Marilyn Matters interview that didn't have a contract attached to it. So we just need to look at what we're doing wrong and fix those problems.
Okay, and what do you feel like the school system is doing wrong?
Like I said, I think, I think we need to care a little bit more. These teachers are burnt. Teachers are burnt out, and I get it. Teachers are burnt out, and I wish that we just all come together as a team and focus on just trying to give our kids the best possible education to have them able to compete with Montgomery County and other schools out there.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much for that. There's just so much that the county is very concerned about. If you were to win this seat, you would be coming into the office at a very special, stressful time for the county. Where do you feel like our county is now, and what specific plans do you have for the direction of our county?
First, if I'm elected, my main goal is to hit the ground running. I'm going to work with the staff that's already there and see and look at our policies, look at our processes, and build from there. We've got to look at what we're doing wrong and put it out on the table and fix those processes and move on. Like I said, there's no room to right now, and the budget's going to be complete if I'm elected already. So we have to hit the ground running, take over, and just continue the processes. Continue and look at what we're doing wrong later on down the line and make changes from there.
Is there anything the county's doing right in your estimation?
Good question. Like just this past week, with closing down the Tanger outlets for a day, that's lost revenue for the county. That's our fifth biggest revenue resource. And we can't continue to have that. We got to get this juvenile crime problem under control.
To be clear, I just want to fact check that. Tanger outlets decided to close because there was a quote unquote meetup of young adults. There was not any indication that there will be crime by the young adults or anything like that. It was a meetup so that the kids could be in a location. So I just want to make sure that I'm fact checking and putting out the correct information. I do not want the listeners to assume that the young adults that were planning to meet there were planning to meet there for nefarious reasons outside of meeting up as teenagers to have what they considered to be fun walking around Tanger Outlets, and Tanger Outlets decided to subsequently close. What would you do in context to that you brought up, in context to providing an outlet or a resource for our young adults?
We have like over 30 community centers in our community right now in Prince George's County. And we need to make sure that there's programs available for these kids to visit these community centers and just have fun. We have a police athletic league in Prince George's County, and we just need to ensure that these programs are funded so kids can take advantage of it. We just need to have more resources allocated for our kids.
When you talk about the community centers, are you talking about the ones under the park, the Maryland National Capital Park and Planning Commission?
Yeah.
And do you know the current budget that they operate from?
I don't have it in front of me right now, but I think it's like $50 million.
No. It's much higher. But so thank you so much for joining us. I do want to give you the ability to have your final thoughts to the Prince George's County community at large. Again, this is Mr. Jonathan White. He is the Republican nominee for Prince George's County Executive. And go ahead and give us any final thoughts that you have. And thank you for joining us on the show. Thank you for taking the time out today. Please give us your final thoughts.
Thank you. Like I said, I think me and Miss Brave Boy just want better for the community. But I want to thank you guys for giving me a chance to even speak and just get my platform out there. Thank you, and I really appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Right. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Community and Comment Watch listeners, for following along, for listening, and for joining us today. I will be back next week, and let's see if we can get some more. Let's see if we can actually get some elected officials on the call and see what they're doing to support our community. I'm going to pass it back to my wonderful co-host, Dave Rabin.
Thank you, Parker, and on with the show. Needless to say, it's been a rocky start with the Trump presidency, with all kinds of cuts to various agencies and departments, tariffs, immigration restrictions at all. But is there a method to the madness? Are we looking at a total overhaul of our democracy? And joining us to look at the question is Andy Z on the editorial board of refusefascism.org and host of Revolution Nothing Less, the show on YouTube. Andy Z, welcome to Community Watch and Comment. It's really good to have you.
Thank you. Thank you, David. I'm glad to be here.
I appreciate you being with us and appreciate callers, 202-588-0893. This is Community Watch and Comment, and we want your comments, your questions, whatever you have to say. We need you to chime in. Again, 202-588-0893. So, Andy Z, are we looking at a slow motion or maybe not so slow motion coup of our government? I mean, this is arguably not business as usual.
That's right. It's an understatement, not business as usual. I represent, the organization Refuse Fascism. .org. You can find it on the internet, and we are coming we formed actually after the election in 2016 and warned of this and tried to organize and did organize in opposition during the first Trump regime. Now we are raising two key things. We're proceeding from an understanding of that this is fascism, and we raise the slogan no. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And we have a demand. We demand that the Trump fascist regime must go now, exactly because it is the fascism itself is not a curse word, and we can discuss that more, what actually is fascism. But I want to emphasize that fascism has momentum and a direction to a different form of rule of the same system we've been living under. But it is a different form of rule, one that is going to be quite catastrophic for humanity around the world and certainly for how this country is ruled. We've already seen that, and it can become too late to stop it. And so we have a program for what we believe and can demonstrate is needed to get this regime removed from power and to prevent it from consolidating its fascist program.
Right. You know, I did some canvassing in North Carolina in the lead up to the election last November, and I was talking about fascism to folks that people did that weren't entirely convinced that they really needed to vote. And I wasn't sure. I realized in the aftermath that they maybe didn't even know what fascism was. If you could talk about it, I mean, it's amazing. Our education system has not produced a populace that understands what fascism is. If you could talk about that.
Well, sure. Look, and no election, whether it's a fair election or a fraudulent election, could legitimate fascism. And we say in our call to conscience, a call to act, which people can find on our website, refusefascism.org, that fascism, it's not a curse word. And when it's fully imposed, it's a radically oppressive and repressive form of rule over the people in this country with tremendous devastating impact on the people of the world. So what are the elements of that? One, the rule of law is shredded. Two, civil and democratic rights are eliminated. Three, dissent is piece by piece criminalized. The truth is bludgeoned, and group after group is demonized and targeted along a trajectory that leads to great catastrophe. And along with this, there's the complete disregard of international law and international norms. And what we've seen is the government institutions purged and are stocked with now Trump MAGA loyalists. Fascism always depends on violence, both from the state, but also from these vigilante groups, which Yes, Trump has said stand down for now, but when he wants to, he's constantly stoking them, with vengeance and revenge and when he needs to call them forward, as he did on January 6, 2021, and if he needs to do this again, he'll do it again. So, but the key thing to focus on is that it is a radically oppressive and oppressive form of rule over the people of this country. And it has a program. I'll just add this at this point. We can get into it more. The program is white supremacy, patriarchy, and now even natalism. They want people to, they're going to give their, discussing giving people huge bonuses for having multiple children. And of course, there's nothing wrong with people having children, but this is a program combined with the taking away the right to abortion and birth control, which is on their agenda of a Handmaid's Tale. It's white supremacy, it's patriarchy, it's the hatred of people from other countries, refugees, immigrants, xenophobia. And it is, look, at the core of this regime, is a Christian fascist form of rule, very transactional America first foreign policy. But again, come back to, it's a different form of rule, and that's why it can become too late to stop it. Because once they have full control, and they do control the three branches of government, once they're able to rule out dissent and opposition, then the forms of struggle are very difficult to overcome. It requires a different kind of resistance, which we don't want to have to move to, because we could actually stop it now.
I mean, it's rather daunting. I mean, you have relatively conservative commentators like David Brooks, the New York Times, saying, you know, this is not politics as normal. There's need for national mobilization. This is David Brooks. This is a Republican conservative commentator saying we are not in normal times. I mean, it's rather daunting. I mean, you have Trump during the campaign saying that it's important to vote in the upcoming election. I think they said this last summer, and then you won't have to do it again. And it really kind of struck me as rather daunting. I mean, what, you won't have to do it again? What is he implying, that we won't have elections anymore? I mean, it's you know, we are in scary times, needless to say.
Yeah, you know, I spoke of that on the mall on Saturday in Washington, D.C., making the point that, and I've, you know, lived in New York most of my life, and you got to listen to Donald Trump. I mean, it's true, he's a lunatic. he speaks with the vocabulary of a fifth grader on purpose, but you have to listen to what he says because he actually does mean it. And when he says you won't have to vote again, he is telling you what they're going to do. And first off, it's what these fascist elements in the Republican Party, who now own it completely, have been doing for some time. And we have to just really face up to it. Look, we start with a constitution in this country that was designed to protect the economic engine of the country's first 90 years, which is slavery. And so we still are living with an electoral college that is weighted to the slave states and to the rural states. America was largely a rural country at that time. But now, you know, the 80,000 people in one area have the same representation as 30 million people in another area. So there's nothing democratic about that. But this fascist Republican MAGA party, that's not good enough for them. They are going all around the country, purging voter rights, and essentially purging people of color from the voting rights and any area that they would could sense disagreement. These are all things that they are doing, let alone that they have trained millions of people, probably 30 million people who believe whatever they say, such as that Trump won the election in 2020. And he can't let that go. That even had to do with his Easter message this year. So you're being told, we're not going to respect the next election. And besides which, they could consolidate a fascist form of rule before then. This is why your point, David, no, it's not business as usual. And with millions need to be in the streets, not allowing business as usual when that business is cementing fascist rule down our throats with the vilest and most degrading morality. And this is important. So this is why David Brooks, yes, he's a never Trumper Republican, a very conservative and religious man, or man certainly of faith, and he's calling for a civic rebellion. And in that, I agree with him. We need, there needs to be a massive movement from below that happens with millions of people very soon taking to the streets in a continual way that makes the country ungovernable in the sense that he can't implement his program and even maintain his hold on power, as we put it in our statement of conscience, call to act. This is very important. And as I said on the mall, which people can find that speech, I believe, and certainly on our social media for refusefascism.org, this has been done. It was been done and even succeeded just 2 weeks ago in South Korea, where when the president there attempted to institute martial law, people took to the streets and they were out initially every Friday night, I believe. And eventually there became dueling demonstrations, supporters of this fascistic president and supporters of the regime, which was not a picnic regime anyway, but it was definitely very different than the fascistic president who wanted to impose martial law. And these were dueling protests, but the country became consumed with this. We saw that during the Arab Spring. And there can be the kind of upheaval of nonviolent, just want to emphasize that, nonviolent protests, people in the public square. Many countries have done things where, and I understand that our friends, our chapter in D.C. is starting in McPherson Square, I think either tomorrow night on this. People getting out after work, maybe all across the country, every day at 6 o'clock, people bang pots and pans. And you get a situation where the people who are resisting, which are still too few in the institutions, but it's starting to turn. Some law firms are standing up to the attempt to get to wipe them out by the Trump regime. Harvard has finally stood up and hopefully inspiring college presidents and college administrations, and especially if the students rise up to not be dictated to by this regime as to what they can teach, who they can teach, the rights of students and faculty to hold to their beliefs and speak out. This is a very dangerous time that we're living in, and we have to act now. There is not a lot of time. It doesn't take that long to change the rule book, to put it that way, because a lot of the policies that we live under actually are norms. They're not actually laws. And then ultimately, we have a Supreme Court that is stocked with these Christian fundamentalists and Christian fascists even, and have been appointed by Donald Trump and for a reason.
Right. I mean, what do you think about the opposition to Trump? I mean, what do you make of, I guess the Supreme Court is showing some kind of spine. Late Friday night, early Saturday, they ruled that a new batch of Venezuelans should not be deported to El Salvador. What do you make of the opposition that's coming from the courts? And then let's talk about what's happening with Congress.
Well, I think, there's opposition in the lower levels of courts, including from Trump-appointed judges. But then there's the Supreme Court, 7-2 this weekend, kind of an emergency measure to put a halt to the temporary halt to the most the next plane to take people to a concentration camp in the jungle of El Salvador. And let's be clear, this is a complete vitiation, a complete elimination of the rule of law to deport people to a country where they're beyond your control and where there's not even any pretense of a legitimate process. So I think the Supreme Court, though, certainly I am not privy to their deliberations, but I think on a certain level, a few of them felt like this is not the best ground to stand on to institute fascism. We got to find something a little better. They at least felt that. And I think they were probably, this is not a position of refuse fascism. I think that there's an institutional question here that they're probably, Roberts has some belief that there need to be a judiciary that's not just being dictated to full lock, stock and barrel by Trump. At the same time, their decision is A, temporary, and B, has enough loopholes in the language for them to drive a fascist truck through. And so I'm not necessarily hopeful about where they'll finally land on this question of his right to declare because of something he deems is a threat to foreign policy, an absurdity.
Andy, we're running out of time.
Okay, sorry.
No, don't apologize. We have a couple of callers and just 4 minutes left.
Great.
Real quickly, caller one, your question or your comment. So appreciate you calling in.
Is that for me?
You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Hey, Andy. This is Cindy from Refuse Fascism here in D.C.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
I'm great. And I just wanted to flesh out your point about McPherson. Tomorrow night at 6:30, we're calling it the Refuse Fascism Power Hour. The Trump fascist regime must go now. And we'll be at McPherson Square at 6:30 tomorrow for a short protest and then real resistance talk, including getting organized to go to the conference in New York City this Sunday. So that's at 15th and K Northwest.
Well, thank you, David, for providing the opportunity for me to find out what we're doing in Washington, D.C. That's fantastic. Thank you, Cindy.
I so appreciate you letting our listeners know about that. And we have another caller. Please chime in. We're running out of time. Love to hear from you.
Yeah, this is Joe from Bowie. How you doing? I'm very pleased with what I'm hearing. However, it's puzzling to me that the administration would denigrate Harvard, and a lot of his people are Harvard graduates. Why would they stand for that kind of denigration and be supportive of this administration? It's very puzzling that you would allow this man to denigrate your institution. It's just amazing to me. Thank you.
Excellent question.
I so appreciate you chiming in. Thank you so much.
Just very
good thoughts, Andy.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. I think what people have to understand is that not only is this country divided at the very top between these MAGA fascists and those who want to preserve the way the country's been ruled, like the Democratic Party and people who have followed them, but it's all the way down through every institution. It is split, with actually the majority of people being decent people who hate what's going on. But the Harvard graduates in the administration, in the Trump regime, they want to transform the nature of Harvard. See, they've felt like the underdog for a long time. They've had their conservative publications at Harvard, but they have a different idea of what every institution should be. So you can have a new society that has the shell of what was before, but the actual content of it is different. So you can even see these fascists appropriating language people like Martin Luther King, even, but then using that for their agenda And there's a, you know, the irony of it is sometimes dizzying about how they would actually try to transform these institutions. So I think there are people who...
And yeah. Andy, we are
out of time.
We are, I'm sorry. So appreciate you joining us. I've been talking with Andy Z on the editorial board of Refuse Fascism. Excuse me, refusefascism.org. And host of the Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're out of time. And speaking with Andy Z, thank you so much for being with us.
All right, thank you. Hope to come back soon.
Absolutely. Great having you. And on with our show. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War, and we have an interview pre-taped with important guests. So on with the show. 2025 is the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War, a 21-year conflict that killed over 2 million Southeast Asian civilians, close to 1.5 million Vietnamese soldiers, and almost 60,000 American soldiers, sailors, Marines, and airmen. Joining us to talk about this anniversary is Ron Carver, co-editor of Waging Peace in Vietnam, U.S. Soldiers and Veterans Who Opposed the War, and poet Nguyen Phan Quy Mai, author of two novels, The Mountain Sing and Dust Child, and a new collection of poems, The Color of Peace. Ron Carver and Nguyen Phan Quy Mai, welcome to Community Watch and Comment. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, David, for having us. And hello, everyone, for listening to us. Thank you.
And Ron Carver, your thoughts on this 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War.
David, I just returned myself from Vietnam, and it's actually my 11th visit in 8 years. I was struck by the extent to which folks in Vietnam are still suffering from the legacies of the war, the unexploded bombs. Two children died 2 days before I got there, and the effects of Agent Orange. But I was also overwhelmed by the hope and the optimism. Quy Mai, I wonder if you would tell us a bit about your new book of poems, The Color of Peace.
Hi, Ron. It's an honor to have a conversation with you today. And I must say that it is thanks to people like you who advocated for peace for Vietnam that we could end the war. So many people around the world fought for peace, and we need to do it more these days because there are so many wars still rage on around the world. And just like my novels, The Mountain Sing and Dust Child, my new book, The Color of Peace, documents the impact of the war on Vietnamese and non-Vietnamese people. So, you know, you mentioned about the impact of the long-lasting impact of the war on Vietnamese and non-Vietnamese people these days, from Agent Orange to unexploded ordinances to intergenerational trauma. So I documented that impact in my book, and as a call for action, you know, I think we should do more to build sustainable peace around the world, because I'm afraid that one day the human race would make ourselves extinct because we keep doing horrible things to each other.
Quy Mai, your new book of poetry, The Color of Peace, to me, it seems it's divided into two parts. Is that correct?
Yeah. So at first, I needed to confront head on the impact of the war on myself, my family members, and the people around me. And then I also talk about, you know, in the second part, I talk about Vietnam beyond the war, Vietnam as a country of more than 4,000 years of history and culture. So I tell stories about my parents, our culture, our food, our landscape. I have love poems in the book as well to celebrate, you know, the humanity of Vietnamese and non-Vietnamese people. And, you know, a key poem in the book, The Color of Peace, was actually written in Colombia when I was there to read poetry, and I met the victims of war, and I saw the color of peace in the laughter of the children of Colombia. So this book is my wish for peace around the world, and you know, to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the war, I'm donating 100% of the proceeds to organizations that support the victims of the Vietnam War. And these organizations are doing amazing work, and they are being run by a lot of volunteers. These organizations are Renew, Peace Trees Vietnam, and the Doe Fund. So, you know, these organizations are removing unexploded bombs from Vietnam, bombs that still kill children. And innocent people like you just mentioned, you know, that you saw during your visit to Vietnam, and organizations that help victims of Agent Orange, which, you know, I mean, during the war, so many tons of this chemical was sprayed onto Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, and children are still born deformed by this chemical. And, you know, and the effect is still devastating.
Well, I want to ask you to jump in, because we don't have that much time, to read two of my favorite poems from this volume. One is called A Conversation During Tet, and then the next one is a love poem. I see a poem of peace reconciliation between people and peoples, The Garden of Time.
Thank you, Ron.
You could start with A Conversation During Tet.
Thank you, Ron. A conversation during Tet. In my parents' living room at Tet, the Vietnamese New Year, where Dao and my flowers bring the color of luck and blessing to our home. Sitting opposite me is an elderly man whose love of life sparkles on his gentle face as he tells me about his 6 months walk through jungles during the war to get from the north to the battlefield of the south. It was 1969 and Agent Orange was raining down. Our commander told us to pee into our handkerchiefs, put them onto our nose and keep walking, he told me. Some of the men's comrades have died from the effects of Agent Orange, their children deformed, disabled, unable to walk. But today is Tet, the new year, and the man doesn't want to talk about bad memory. It is unlucky, so he tells me about jungle birds' songs, about butterflies and flowers whose colors were so peaceful as if they bloomed for Buddha.
Beautiful. And The Garden of Time?
Thank you. The Garden of Time. I sow myself into your being. In your hands I bud. On your chest I grow new leaves. On your lips I flower. On your body I yield my fruit. Alongside you, I become a tall tree lush, gathering the sweetness of spring. On the garden of our beings, we plant, nurture, and harvest, and we grow our two names into one.
Beautiful. We are so lucky, Kwe Mai, that you could join us today, 2 days before you're going to appear at Busboys and Poets, the Tacoma location of Busboys and Poets, right by the Tacoma Metro Station. Thank you so much.
And, you know, I'm so excited about this conversation. I think this conversation will be life-changing for me because I will be having a conversation with Gwen Kalin, who was a helicopter pilot during the war and who has volunteered a lot of time from his life to translate Vietnamese literature.
Great. And it will be, as I understand, moderated by Ethelbert Miller with a special guest, Lilo Gonzalez, the singer-songwriter from Tacoma Park. How wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you.
Wonderful. And that's going to be at 6 o'clock on Thursday. Yeah. And Ron Carver and Winfong Kwe Mai, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us on your show.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, Ron.
Take care.
Thank you so much for listening. I'm Dave Raven. Stay safe and have a great week.
WPFW presents Still We Rise, our 48th anniversary celebration on Friday, April 25th from 7 until 11 p.m. at Martin's Crosswinds in Greenbelt, Maryland. Entertainment will be provided by vocalist Navasha Dea and her trio, and WPFW programmers and poets Esther Everam and Zain El Amin. The evening includes an award ceremony, dinner, and dancing to the music of DJ James Funk. That's Still We Rise, WPFW's 48th anniversary celebration. Details at WPFWFM.org.
WPFW has been a site of resistance in defense of truth, justice, and culture for 48 years. Our spring membership drive begins with a special celebration of James Brown's birthday, May 3rd, and closes with a centennial birthday celebration of Malcolm X on May 19th. Two pillars of music and message. Your financial sustenance is needed more than ever to continue this type of programming. As a new listener or current member, this is your opportunity to contribute to the growth of an institution that stands resolute against both gross injustice and repression and the mass erasure of history and culture by amplifying the voices of scholars, artists, and activists whose work centers the humanity of all people. That's 48 years of being a site of resistance in defense of truth, justice, and culture, May 3rd through the 19th. WPFW works daily to build the world we want to inhabit by building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
In commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the end of the U.S. war in Vietnam, Busboys and Poets, along with the Institute for Policy Studies, will host Vietnamese poet and novelist Nguyen Phan Ke Mai in conversation with Vietnam veteran Wayne Carlin in a program moderated by E. Ethelbert Miller on Thursday, April 24th from 6 to 8 p.m. At the event, 50 years after the end of the Vietnam War, A Pathway Toward Healing and Reconciliation, Ke Mai will read from her new book of poems, The Color of Peace, and Wayne will read from his latest book, Memorial Days, Vietnam Stories, 1973 to 2022. That's 50 years after the end of the Vietnam War, A Pathway Toward Healing and Reconciliation, Thursday, April 24th, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Tacoma Busboys and Poets. More information and how to RSVP can be found online, ips-dc.org/events. WPFW is your station for jazz and justice, building a better world one broadcast at a time.
I'm Dennis Williams with the WPFW editorial. Kilmar Abrego Garcia, an apprentice sheet metal worker raising three children with his wife in Prince George's County, has been kidnapped by the United States government. On March 12th, Abrego Garcia was pulled over by ICE agents, accused of being a member of the Salvadoran gang MS-13, and then transported to a terrorist confinement center in his native El Salvador. In fact, Abrego Garcia had fled his homeland at 16 because of threats from local gangs, and a U.S. immigration judge in 2019 granted him protection from being deported because he would face persecution if he ever returned. The Justice Department admitted that his removal was an administrative error, and the U.S. Supreme Court ordered the government to facilitate the return of Abrego Garcia, who has never been charged with a crime or found to have any gang affiliation. President Trump shrugged and said that it was up to El Salvador. Salvadoran dictator Nayib Bukele, appearing in the Oval Office, scoffed that the idea of releasing him was, quote, preposterous, while Trump and top advisors smiled approvingly. This is an appalling violation of law and of justice that must not be allowed to stand. If Kilmer Abrego-Garcia can be disappeared in this way, none of us